Before we get to today's show with Josh Wigler, I want to mention the Home Depot has the new Samsung Flex Wash and Flex Dry washer and dryer pair. These innovative appliances are the first ever to allow you to wash two loads and dry two loads of laundry at the same time in the same machine. So when you do your laundry, you don't have to mix the different colors and fabrics together, risking color transfer or fabric damage. Flex Wash integrates a large capacity lower washer for everyday washes and an additional washer for separate colors or delicates. Flex Dry integrates a large tumble dryer for everyday items and a flat dryer for delicates. Both the washer and dryer have a number of innovative features to make doing laundry easier on you and your clothes. And Flex Wash offers a steam wash option for removing stains and self-clean to keep the washer odor-free. Flex Dry measures multi-steam to steam away odors and wrinkles, while Sensor Dry optimizes drying temperatures to avoid damage to your clothes. And both are Wi-Fi connected, allowing you to set and start the machines and receive alerts when your load is finished. Together, Flex Wash and Flex Dry offers the ultimate flexibility to provide the best possible care for your clothes. So check out the Flex Wash and Flex Dry from Samsung at Home Depot.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Lur.
Do the wiggle, man. I do the wiggle, man. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. The Wiggle Room, we're here. It is May. It is Survivor finale month. Josh Wigler.
Well, in the future, for us, it's May. For you guys listening, it's May. How is it? How is it in the future? Is May 1st going well? I don't know.
It is Game Changer May.
Game Changer May. It's going to be May, as all of the memes would happily tell you. Yeah, we're in the final month of the season.
The home stretch.
Home stretch. So lots of stuff to talk through. We've got another person on the jury here. I believe Debbie falling in place in the jury format as it's
jury
supposed
curse,
to be, right?
Yeah.
The jury curse continues. Is the jury curse still possible to continue, or are we done?
I think it's a stretch for it to continue onward. We had a voicemail call about it on the show with Bryce the other day, where if you looked at Jessica Lewis as not being voted out technically, then Zeke became the fourth person on the jury.
Oh,
it's really
God.
It's really a stretch. You have
elaborate.
Yes.
All right. So you think death of the jury curse?
I think it'll be interesting to see if more people go out in their spot on the jury, but I don't think it'll be possible for people to go straight through.
Yeah, no jury man thing going on.
Maybe
here.
Somebody like if Brad goes out this week, well, he wasn't on the jury, so then you could say like, well, he can fill in one of the gaps of somebody
right,
who hasn't gone
sure.
out in the jury before.
Sure, sure. I mean, this kind of stuff is fun. Like, Survivor does have this way of echoing itself on returning player seasons.
Right.
In a kind of, in many ways, as we saw this week, in a few of these scenes, like with everything that went on with Cerie. So I think that's fun. But I don't know. I'm not like betting the whole future of the season.
No, you should not. Nobody should. Nobody should be betting on this.
It seems like an unproductive thing to do, but it'd be fun to see. It would be hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a lot of betting that's going on Survivor also.
Not anymore. Not these days.
No,
that
not
used
these
to be
days.
A thing. Used to
yeah.
be a thing.
Okay. Josh Wigler, how's your week been?
Week's been good. Week's going really well. Fun weekend so far. Social weekend. I guess it's not a weekend anymore. It's Monday.
Yeah.
I hope my Monday is going well. My Sunday night, if things go according to plan, involve me dying tonight, Rob.
Yes, you're dying tonight?
I'm dying tonight. I'm filming a death scene for a friend's horror movie.
Oh, wow. Have you done a lot of acting before?
I've done some, it's been a little while. A little bit here and there.
Are you playing yourself?
Just a smidge. No, I'm not. I'm playing a scientist who is going to be one of many scientists who gets killed at a certain turn during the horror movie. Like, something happens and all of the scientists get destroyed one by one, and I'm just cameoing as one of the scientists. And I guess I'm going to be smushed to death by a door. Hashtag door death.
Door death. I actually was in my friend's very, very low budget horror movie and I got stabbed to death. And I really was very uncomfortable about it because it wasn't a prop knife. And the guy who was the actor, like, again, this was not a real set where it was a very, very low budget movie where if something happened to me, I was pretty sure they were just going to throw me in a dumpster. Like, I was just like, it was not where there was like Survivor Medical standing by to assist me and they were going to make sure I got the proper care. It would have been, oh my God, we killed this guy. Quick, throw him in the dumpster.
Wow. Yeah. Dangerous movie making. Not recommended.
This was
certainly
not the
Scorn
either. I did not die in the Scorn.
You did not. Were you one of the survivors of the Scorned?
I did have a small cameo, but I did not get killed.
One of these days I shall actually watch the
Scorned. Yes. Okay.
I'm glad you didn't get stabbed and thrown into an alleyway.
Yes, thank goodness. Thank goodness.
I'm glad that we're able to talk today. And Okay. Hopefully I will not die during the actual door death. But if I do, you heard it here first.
And one other non sequitur, Josh, I just want to say I'm really enjoying you and Antonio Mazzaro on the Leftovers post-show recaps. Exceptional job you guys are doing.
The Leftovers, the show on HBO, final season right now. The premise of that show, if you have not heard of it somehow, I guess not somehow, because it's not really like a super viewed show, but the people who watch it really, really like it. The premise of the show is that 2% of the world's population suddenly disappears in an instant. And everybody else is left behind and struggling with their grief of how did this happen? Where did they go? What do we do next? It's kind of like Survivor Game Changers, how like the elite players went out in the pre-merge and now we're just stuck with everybody.
More than 2%.
More than 2%. I'm just kidding. That's just a mean thing.
All right, Josh. So let's get into talking about this week's Survivor. And Debbie ends up being the person who went out, and I've always felt like, and tell me if I'm reading too much into this, you and Debbie Wanner have had a unique relationship.
What gives you that idea? What gives you that impression?
I just feel like that you have always, or she has seemed to have taken a liking to you, where I don't really know if she has that with anybody else in the Survivor press corps.
I have no idea what the experience of anybody else in the Survivor press corps is with Debbie. I believe Scott Porter was very fond of Debbie during the Survivor Game Changers preseason press. Scott Porter of Friday Night Lights, who, if you do not remember, was out there as part of the EPK crew.
Oh, I remember.
I know you remember. So I remember him really liking her. Yeah, no, Debbie is very funny. She is really fun to talk to. As you can see, you know, she's a super entertaining character on television, if that's what you're into. And for whatever reason, during our exit interview in Koh Rang, Debbie adopted me over the phone. I don't remember exactly how it happened. Other than she was explaining how this is something she does. Like, she was explaining how you can't trust anybody out on Survivor, and Josh would say this to you and then he would go and say this. And she always uses like the person she's talking to as the example. And I believe you actually did this on your exit interview with her this week on the podcast. He said, "Debbie, I would never betray you." And I said something similar to that to Debbie during our Koh Rang exit interview. And she said, "Did you hear that? I'm adopting Josh. He's going to be my new son, and we're going to play Blood versus Water round three.
Yeah.
One of these days." And then she brought it up again during this exit interview. So she must really have that as an idea in her mind.
So you and Debbie as a blood versus water pair.
Now, yeah, she's my Survivor mom. Would I vote out my Survivor mom? That's the question.
Are you the Sierra Easton of Survivor Blood versus Water 3?
Maybe. It's possible. You never know until it happens. But that could be a season at some point in the future. I mean, we do have this weird thing, Rob, where we say things on podcasts or in audiobooks, and then someday they come true. Like the Witch's Coven coming true in Second Chance after describing Sierra and Laura Moret as witches in our Blood versus Water chapter of The Evolution of Strategy. Lots of things like that. Could this be planting the flag for a future season where I compete on Survivor with Debbie Wanner?
Unlikely.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah,
wouldn't think
maybe
so.
Not. Yeah, probably not. But it'd be fun. It'd be fun. Who knows? Stranger things have happened.
I don't think so. I don't think stranger things have happened.
I think that would be the strangest thing that's ever happened, certainly in my life. That would be very weird.
Now, Debbie talked both with me and with you, and I think in all of her exit press, she described how we weren't really getting the full picture in the show. The show was painting
her
one way.
Yes. She was acting. It was acting, Rob.
Acting, yes.
She was an actor. She should, I don't know, win the Survivor Academy Award. Very convincing.
And a lot of times we get these sort of explanations after the fact from a player like Coach Phillip, especially if you've ever listened to an interview that he's done. Everything was on purpose. He wasn't losing it. Josh, what did you make of what Debbie had to say? Were you buying what Debbie was selling?
Yeah, I mean, this idea that all of it was an act. You know, to some degree, I think that things can be, you know, it can be both ways to some extent. I think that Debbie is a bit of a wackadoo. You know, I do think that Debbie is eccentric, and I think that she would own that. I think that a lot of those Debbie antics that we saw in the show were very, very authentically Debbie, not an act. Like, I think that when she's at the merge, Courtney Mooning tie and everything like that, like, I think that that's really Debbie. Maybe she's not drunk. Maybe she is. Who really knows? She holds that she doesn't drink, but she did drink some white wine in her Ponderosa video, so I don't really know. But I think it could also be an act to some extent. And she talks about, like, the Culpepper thing and saying, like, maybe I was overacting. I do think some Reddit detectives, I don't know if this has happened on the podcast, like, tried to reorder how that Crazy Debbie episode went down a few weeks ago. It did seem like some things were maybe out of sequence. So I buy it to a degree, but I also think after two seasons of Debbie, and certainly from talking to Debbie, like, Debbie is a little bit out there. There's just no stepping around that fact.
I do think that maybe there are times where she's more in control, and I do think that we will see on the TV show sort of the wackiest stuff because they want to make good TV. I mean, she says with you, what's the worst thing you could be on TV? That's boring. And yeah. So she does try to play certain things up, but is Debbie crazy like a fox in your mind? Not Eddie Fox.
Crazy like a fox. Well, I said in last week's podcast, and I hold to it, that, like, I think Debbie is that type of player that you overlook because you think that she's just so out there and you don't think that she's really going to be capable of taking you out necessarily. And then she comes out of nowhere and the bomb doors are open and she's ready to fire. And suddenly Liz Markham's out of the game or Ozzy is out of the game. Although she doesn't take full ownership over the Ozzy move. She wants to distribute that across the six. Mm-hmm. I still think that that's the thing with Debbie, is she is a lot better at executing moves than you would give her credit for. I would stop short of saying maybe that she's like, she's better at Survivor than you give her credit for. Because I think that there are parts of her game that are not good, and I don't know how you work on it. Like, I wonder about her jury management skills, for instance. But I think that when it comes to, like, executing a move, she can be lethal. Your game could be over, and it could be Debbie's fault. So is she crazy like a fox? In some occasions, yeah. She's like the fox that's, like, a little bit bonkers, but every once in a while comes out with a really scarily sly idea.
Yeah, would you say that she's better at executing a mission than necessarily, like, being the general? And I'm not talking about the guy that wears all denim in
right.
the final
Debbie
tribal
DeCanio.
Council.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot to that. Yeah. I think when it comes to her trying to lead the charge of an alliance, you look back at Ko Rong and you think about how she approached Ty back then, right? Like, he's in, Ty's in, you're in the alliance now, right, Ty? Like, that's a little aggressive. I think when it comes to that, when it comes to rallying the soldiers like that, I don't think Debbie's my favorite player on the field. But when it comes to Debbie being a part of a majority group or part of a strong, tight alliance, and it comes down to her coming up with some idea of, like, this person needs to go, this is exactly how it's going to be done, and this is how we're going to do it. It often can be executed upon. Not all the time, but when she's just coming up with an operation, we've seen some really successful operations.
Okay, well, let's talk about Debbie as it pertains to her being undone to some degree by Aubrey. There was so much chatter before the season started of the Ko Rong 4. They're all going to work together. Sandra talked about it. I think Tony was even talking about it. Is the Ko Rong alliance the most exaggerated threat since Y2K, Josh?
Since Y2K, I mean, a lot of time has passed since Y2K, so I got to imagine that there have been some pretty exaggerated threats, but this is fairly exaggerated. It was certainly something that was coming up a lot in the preseason, though, like a lot of people talking about there's four Ko Rong out here, like Sandra said, and she says that in the game as well. Aubrey and Debbie, like, it definitely did seem like there was some sort of, you know, some sort of moment that this was building to. Like, if they were both going to be in the game long enough, eventually something was going to give. One was going to get the better of the other. And Debbie was very open about that in the preseason of, like, I'm coming for Aubrey. Aubrey's coming after me. We're playing it nice, but we both know what the score is, and it's high stakes poker, and it's going to be incredible when it happens. And when it did finally happen, we did get, you know, a little bit of an Aubrey and Debbie confrontation in this episode. That's certainly what starts to galvanize the talk of taking out Debbie when Aubrey goes to Sarah and Sarah starts chewing on that. So it happened, but it happened so quietly compared to where I thought it was going to go. That's been a disappointment for me this season, is I do think the Ko Rong thing was overblown. Ko Rong was so recent, and to have so many people from that season back here and to have a really dynamic relationship between Aubrey and Debbie not really get extensive focus, That feels like a bummer for me. I know a lot of Aubrey fans are just kind of bummed with the lack of screen time she's gotten this season, or like meaningful screen time. But that certainly was a bummer for me, that it kind of just sort of fizzled out. Certainly ended up happening, but it was just very quiet.
The thing that's really odd to me, though, is we haven't seen any interaction between Aubrey and Ty. And that was a big part of her game down the home stretch in that season, was the relationship she had with Ty, her ability to work with Ty. And I don't think we've seen a scene of them together in this game.
None that I can think of. And that's totally true. That's, you know, again, just another central relationship from Ko Rong. And it's still possibly active here, but we're just not seeing it at all. And you got to wonder then, like, what does that mean? Like, is this not going to be something that bears any fruit? Or whenever it does bear some fruit, is it just going to be, you know, Survivor is relying on your memory of what their relationship was like in Ko Rong? Can they kind of quickly yada yada through some of that stuff and just catch us back up that Ty and Aubrey were at least once upon a time tight? Maybe that's where we're going. But if there is anything going on between Aubrey and Ty right now, we're not seeing a lick of it.
And do you think that it could just pop up like the Debbie and Aubrey thing?
I think that's what I'm saying. It's like, I think that is possible. I think that we could see, like, if one of them is about to go, or if Ty comes over to Aubrey's side for an instrumental vote, or Aubrey goes over to Ty's side for an instrumental vote, and they just really need to catch us up quick on what that history is. I think that they can shorthand it. But I wish that there was room in these episodes to show everything, because I'm sure that what's going on there is fascinating. Like, we didn't hear anything of it, but I cannot imagine that Aubrey and Debbie were, you know, living together quietly. Like, I'm sure that there had to be something compelling that happened between the two of them, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Josh, should we have a takeaway for returning seasons where a bunch of players come back? I know that there was some talk going into Second Chance. Certainly the Kagyan 4 was something that people were talking about. They certainly did not all get it on the same page. Tasha and Spencer did ultimately get to the final 2 there. You also had the San Juan del Sur 3. They certainly were not on the same page. Should the rule be that you shouldn't necessarily be looking at these people who are all coming back from the same season as a block?
I think it's got to be case by case dependent. And I don't think that this even necessarily, you know, busts the myth yet. You know, as you said, the Kagyan 4 didn't really get it together. Cass and Spencer improbably team up to take out Wu, and then Cass is taken out immediately thereafter. But the tightest perceived alliance from Kagyan that was in that game in Second Chance did stick together. Spencer and Tasha were tight, and they did get to the final 3. They occupied 2 of those seats. And now, you know, just thinking about that, that's possibly pretty compelling. I mean, Ty and Aubrey are the perceived tightest pair of anybody from Ko Rong, and they're both still actively in the game. It's hard to imagine the road to the final 3 again for those two, once again, they were in the final 3 together. It's hard to imagine how they get there, but I would still be worried about that as a possibility. I think any reason you can come after somebody, you know, there's so many reasons to go after everybody, and to say that that's not a reason to consider people as a possible threat, I think that would be a mistake, to just completely overlook the history that these people bring together from a previous game.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how you do that, where it's like that there are certain pairs that could team up and be dangerous. But I think that the idea of a block of people from the same season coming together, I think that threat is overblown. Even going back to Survivor All-Stars, where you had, what, 6 people from the Australian Outback, or 5? I don't remember off the top of my head. You had like
a
certain
bunch.
People working together, but, you know, Colby and Jerry wanted to come after each other. So it's not necessarily like the threat of all of the people from a certain season working together.
I think you just have to pay attention to what the history is, or hopefully you hit the island and you remember that history if you don't know who you're playing against, which does not seem like that's usually what happens.
No.
I think that you have to have done your homework, and you have to remember what the connections between each people were. Like, were Debbie and Caleb close? No. Okay, so maybe we can do something there. Were Aubrey and Ty close? Yes, let's keep an eye on that. Were Aubrey and Debbie close and then turned enemies? Yes, okay, that could be something to exploit. Just know your history, know your homework. Don't be a returning player who doesn't know who all these people are, like Colby Donaldson.
Yeah, and it wouldn't hurt to watch the season and not just go on the Survivor Wiki.
That would be great. That would be...
With all due respect to the Survivor Wiki, which I love.
Yes. Yes. Oh, of course. Absolutely. And the great Andrew Savage.
Yes.
But, you know, just do your homework. Do your real homework. Listen to the Evolution of Strategy. Maybe not, but watch the show. I think at least watch the tape. See the tape. Before we got on here, Rob, I had asked people on Twitter if they had any questions for this week's Wiggle Room, because we hadn't really been diving into feedback much this season. Thought we'd shake things up a little bit. And while we're on the topic of Debbie getting taken out, at least in part by Aubrey, this is from Evan Windsor, who said, Debbie made the same mistake, cocky overconfidence to the same person, Aubrey. Has anyone ever made so literal of a same mistake twice in Survivor?
I think that's hard to say. I didn't look at it as the same thing. I mean, first, I
Russell,
guess...
Russell, right? Russell Hance, right? Like, he got to the very end against people he thought he could beat two times in a row and was super, super wrong about
it. Sure, that's fair. But do you look at the Debbie thing, first, just to examine the question, as that it is the same exact thing as what happened to her in Code Wrong?
No, I don't think so. I mean, she does come to Aubrey in both of those episodes, and Aubrey very quickly participates, if not comes up with a counter plan to take out Debbie specifically. But is that like the exact reason why Debbie went home in both cases? Probably not. But there is an overlapping factor and an overlapping agent in both of those operations.
I mean, I just sort of reject the question in that I feel in Koh Rong, Debbie was somebody, she was trying to, you know, bring Julia in, and it wasn't like she was trying to betray Aubrey, and Aubrey knew that Julia was somebody who was going back and being a double agent, and Julia happened to win immunity. And I think that that's how it ended up being Debbie. And yes, it was a betrayal of Debbie from Aubrey, but I just don't look at it as the same exact thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. It's just, you know, Aubrey has outlasted Debbie both times. So it's you know, best 2 out of 3. I think we know the victor by now.
And I'm just trying to think of who that this has happened to, if it has happened to anyone where they have a very similar circumstance going on. And I'm sure maybe the commenters can come up with something, but off the top of my head, it escapes me.
That can be another future off-season Survivor podcast, like the Survivor Nudist Beach we talked about last week.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. Sure.
Which, by the way, is dated for August 10th on my calendar, so... We'll make it happen.
Okay, you're on it? You're on that one?
I'm on it. We said August 10th last week. It's on my calendar. August 10th, we'll make it happen.
Okay, all the juicy butts all in one place.
This will not be a Survivor Batman situation.
Okay, all right. Sounds good.
Well, maybe. Maybe it will. Maybe
put it on the calendar.
Who knows?
Josh, one of the big story beats this episode was something that Jeff Probst has been calling one of his favorite moments of the season, maybe if not ever, was Suri overcoming the literal obstacle where she ends up walking across the balance beam to complete the challenge. And Josh, Steven and I had been talking about it really on all of the podcasts where I've gotten opinions from whether it was Bryce, who loved the moment, and Steven, who was poo-pooing. I was not
Steven's
super high on it.
Steven's usually poo-pooing, as we know. Steven often poo-poos.
Severe gastrointestinal, not liking it. So, Josh, what was your take on the story of Suri in this moment?
Yeah, I want to be a little measured about it. I was definitely cynical at first. Where, like, I watched it. It was a really well put together scene immediately, but it was hyped up. And I think, like, if you remove the hype from it, if you can just like get away from this being like the biggest moment of the season or one of the greatest moments in Survivor history, that's a lot. That's not what's going on here. But it is a really compelling moment, and I think it's actually a really, really great scene in retrospect. The whole act is really kind of marvelous. I mean, this challenge is a really great challenge. These challenges are difficult, especially the really physical ones, especially the ones in the water, especially when these people are as deep into the game as they are right now. They're tired, they're hungry, all of that. They're emotional, their brains are fried, and it's a difficult challenge, and you see people struggling. You see one tribe, or one team rather, just completely dominate it. But then, I don't know, like the music cues of when it's clearly not going to be, you know, like when you know who's going to win the challenge, when that's no longer a question anymore, just the music kind of gets more dramatic, the score is really good, and you're watching someone in Suri. I know that you said like you didn't like it, it was kind of like cheapening the image of Suri that you talked about on the podcast about how Suri you consider the greatest player who's never won. Strong words coming from Rob Cesternino, really strong praise, and that it feels like, you know, why are we not celebrating that more, and why are we focusing on something like this? But I feel like it's kind of the continuation of one of the longest arcs in the franchise now. I really do think that there's something amazing about this player who, you know, going out there on location, freaked out when a bug descended upon her in our interview. Like, is still that Ciri, is still the Ciri who deep down inside is afraid of leaves, is the Ciri who, you know, getting off the couch to come out and play Survivor isn't, you know, like a small deal. It's a really big deal for her to do. And to kind of have that story continue, I like that that's still active all of these years later. It shows that this person who is a really spectacular strategist and social player, that she still has obstacles that she has to overcome, that she's not a perfect player, that she is a human being. I thought that that was really compelling. And I think also for Ciri herself, one of the things that I remember very well from speaking to her in the preseason is she talked about how, I want to bring it at challenges this time. I've never really done it. I kind of just coast by. I think her exact quote on that is, she calls herself a coaster. She says, I'm a coaster. I've never been a deep digger, like, get this money. In this instance, I have to shovel. I have to see what's really good. A lot of the times with the challenges, if I was good, I don't want my family to be embarrassed. As far as balls to the wall competing, I never really went out on Survivor like that. I feel like I have to on this one just for my own self-satisfaction. I have to see what's really in there. That's what she told me in the preseason. And she has a moment like that now. So that's awesome. I think that that's great. I think if you're a Ciri fan, if you're a fan of these Survivor players, especially the ones that really deserve this treatment, that are kind of like mythical stature, I think this was a really cool moment if you were a Ciri Fields fan. Team Bryce on this one.
Again, I'm not mad at it. I'm not bent out of shape about it, but
I think you remove the hype from it and it's a good moment. It's a really good moment if you take away some of the hyperbole.
Yeah, there's a lot of hyperbole around it, and there are so much going on in the game. I feel like that if I had the choice to have seen this or to have seen more of what was going on back at camp, I think I would have chosen to see more of what's going on back at camp. And I don't know. Now maybe it's, we just have to see how this all plays out. If this
That's
is
exactly right.
If this is ultimately part of the Ciri arc of the season where it changes the, you know, the dynamics of the game, maybe this has more importance than I'm giving it credit for right now also.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it would be awesome if Ciri does really well this season. And I think that at least narratively, she's being positioned incredibly well. We've gotten a lot of great Ciri this season so far. So if what we're getting from a scene like this, if you want to take like the sentimentality out of it, if you're not like a sappy type and this doesn't really make you emotional or whatever, I got a little choked up watching it. If that's not you, but you are a Ciri fan, then you should at least take comfort. I think in a moment like this happening has to be good for Ciri moving forward. Like, she really has been established as kind of one of the more heroic figures this season. As somebody who's out here ready and willing and eager to play, has already made some quiet moves that were very effective, was part of the successful vote this week. If Ciri, you know, as we're starting to, you know, winnow down to only a few people left in the season over the next few weeks until there's only one person left, I feel like this has to be good if you're a Ciri fan. So I think overall, all of it, I think it's pretty positive. I think one of the other things, you mentioned how maybe you would like to see what's going on back at camp rather than see a scene like this. I think one of the things that we're getting this season, you know, maybe more than in recent seasons, or maybe it's been trending in this direction for a little while anyway, is I feel like the stop downs on like the emotional beats. Like back in the episode where Varner goes home and there's the scene at the other camp before that where everyone's talking about how hard Survivor is, or the deliberating over the morality of eating this baby and mama goat, or a moment like this where we're seeing Ciri, who has, you know, gotten off the couch and come back to play for her fourth time, and she succeeds in a place like this again, and it empowers her, and it's a moment of self-reflection. I think that there's been a lot more of like stopping down on those emotional beats this season than I can think of in recent Survivor memory, where it tends to be a little bit more game focused. So I think maybe this season is a little bit testing like the audience's interest in that. I find it to be fairly compelling, especially on a season like this, when these are people that you know, you've seen them play before, and now you're just adding some emotional depth to these people, at, you know, fleshing out their characters, so to speak. I think it's good. I'm enjoying it, you know, and I really did enjoy the Ciri scene ultimately for that reason.
I was fine with the goat scene. I really didn't like the Survivor is Hard segment. I thought that was pretty useless in terms of what we saw, in terms of what happened in the game. And then when we saw Ciri and Aubrey come to Brad after, and then it's like, okay, well, at least this is the formation of this alliance. Like, that didn't hold, so Survivor right. is hard. That didn't do anything for me.
Totally. I think it's totally subject to taste, and I totally understand if it doesn't do anything for you. I think for some of these players, I'm a little bit more forgiving on it because they're people that I really like, and I enjoy seeing them, you know, score wins, or if they're overcoming their lowest lows, or if they're even being beaten down by their lowest lows, it can be compelling. So I'm okay with it, but I totally understand if that's not your cup of tea, especially if you're really coming into Survivor very specifically for game-focused stuff. It's not really going to do much to you.
Josh, I also want to get your take on this idea of was the origin of, hey, let's wait for Sari to finish the balance beam so that somebody would spot the secret advantage.
Right. Good question. And we got that again from some people. T. Scott Youngblood asked a similar question. Clay Shirley on Twitter also. But just to like step back just a second, I think that, you know, that's another underrated part of this sequence, of this really compelling act in Survivor, where it's not just, you know, a really great challenge and then Sari is really upset and you go through the whole emotional Sari moment. But then it ends in this really sneaky moment with Sarah getting the secret advantage, and also the tension of, is Michaela going to find this thing the whole time? So I think the whole act is really compelling. That's just that. Do I think that this whole moment was put on and dragged out so that somebody could find that secret advantage specifically for that reason? I don't think specifically for that reason. But as I said with Debbie, I think two things can be true at once. Like, I think that you could be having this moment with Sari, and you could be expanding on this moment with Sari, and at the same time, now there's more time for somebody to find that secret advantage. I think that you can kill two birds with one stone here, and it doesn't have to be one or the other.
Josh, let's go and talk a little bit about Sarah, and I thought that she was really at the center of most of the action this week, despite what Stephen Fishback might award with the fishy this week. So right. Love to get your take on the arc of Officer Sarah.
Officer Sarah, President Sarah,
President
right?
Sarah, I mean, once upon a time, yeah. Now she's back to a civilian.
She's back to a civilian, but I don't know. Like, I feel like she's, I don't know. I think she's playing like a good bipartisan game right now. I feel like she's a good president right now. You know, she's found herself in that same spot from Kagyan, where she is smack dab in the middle of two alliances that she could go for one or go for the other. She's been in that spot two votes in a row now, you know, with the Ozzy thing and with the Debbie thing. And I think that she's navigated those waters pretty well both times. I think that Sarah is, you know, somebody who's well-liked out there by most of the people on that beach. Clearly, people want to work with her, and clearly she feels like she has the options to go with a couple of different sides here. So far, at least, I think that, you know, Sarah's been one of the more compelling figures of the post-merge game for sure, even if it was very quiet pre-merge. I'm liking it. I'm enjoying it. The longer she's in the game, Rob, the more Force Ghost Tony is involved in Chapter 34, so I'm happy.
Yeah, I do like that. Do you like what she did? I know she's been going back and forth, but specifically the move that she made this week. Do you feel like that there's going to be a lot of people that are upset with her, that the six was so tight? Could this be where we end up getting a scene where Brad, Sierra, Ty, Troyzan are back at camp and really just going off on her?
Yeah. And in continuing Troyzan watch, congratulations, Troy, on your immunity win. That was great. I know that you don't love that Sarah went after Debbie.
Yeah.
Not your favorite thing. I think she was probably the right person to take out here. I think Aubrey is certainly going to be very happy about that, though. Really, she just needs to vote correctly. Just like they need to get Sarah on their side. Like, they need to be able to swing those people over. So Sarah has to be going after someone that she wants to go out to go after. It doesn't seem like there's much love lost between Debbie and Sarah. Maybe Sarah has correctly surmised that, like, if she makes a move against the six and Debbie is still around the next day, that Debbie is going to be somebody that she won't be able to explain this to. Like, if she goes after Sierra or if she goes after Brad rather than Debbie, then she takes out somebody who's incredibly close to Debbie, and Debbie will not let that grudge go. I don't see Debbie as a water under the bridge type of person with her two closest allies taken out, seemingly out of completely nowhere by somebody who was supposed to be part of this loyal, tight group. I think she would take that really poorly. So that's one argument.
She's their bulldog.
Right. That's one argument for getting rid of Debbie over the other two, if you're looking at Brad and Sierra as really the two people to target. I think also, Sarah, maybe less so with Brad, but certainly with Sierra in this episode, I do think that we're seeing that those two are really close. Sarah thinks that maybe she's involved in a final three deal with Sierra and Debbie, and that seems to be what Sierra is pitching at that point. So she has an option there. Like, if she wants to swing back and work with those guys, maybe she can explain herself to Sierra a little bit better. Maybe she can explain herself to Sierra and Brad, who seem to be running the six, and be like, I feel like Debbie was your number three. I feel like I was in the back of the line. Now she's gone. You don't have her as an ingredient in the game anymore. I want to be part of this three, and let's run this game together. Like, I think that there can be a move that's made there. I just think that there is more, wait for it, wiggle room with Brad and Sierra than she has with Debbie after a vote like this. If she's wanting to keep her options open, then I think Brad and Sierra remain people that she could possibly make a compelling argument to continue working with.
I brought this up with Aris, and I'd love to have you weigh in on it.
Which was appropriately the oddest podcast that you've done in quite a while, considering the situation you were in.
Yes, of no power being out. I'm very grateful.
Where were you podcasting from? Where was the podcast being conducted?
We were still in this room, but I had to go to handheld mics that were plugged into my Zoom.
It sounded great.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. And in terms of that podcast, I mentioned to Aris that there's nothing more Tony Vlachos than flipping against the people on your side and then coming back to them the next week. Do you think that that could be the story of Sarah?
If Sarah wants to keep playing in the middle, then yeah. You know, and that's the way that you're going to be until you get busted, until you get caught. And I think that it's not unlikely. I think it's potentially very likely that she could get caught after something like this. We don't have the proof that Sarah is such a deaf survivor player that she can continually play this type of game successfully. In fact, like, if we do have evidence, it's that she really can't from her past season, but she's done it successfully twice so far. Let's see if she's going to continue to ping pong. I think that if she is embodying the spirit of Tony, that's probably her move. Unless now she feels like she's higher in the pecking order of this new six that's been created. But Sarah is the type of player who wants to feel really comfortable. I was thinking about this actually during my rewatch of this episode today, that Sarah really was the biggest benefactor of the swaps this season, I think. Like, Sarah hasn't really ever had a moment where she's had to really feel like she's in trouble, I don't think. Nuku doesn't go to Tribal Council in those first two rounds. She doesn't have to worry about Tribal Council until her second swap. She is in a very clearly dominant position within that tribe where votes are just going to go the way that she expects them to go, you know, external drama notwithstanding. And then she's reunited with this huge pack of Nuku at the merge, and she's got to feel pretty safe. So if she's somebody who is just like naturally a little bit more alert anyway, because she's a cop, if you want to buy into that being a thing, and the fact that she hasn't had to really worry about her own hide yet, I think Sarah's been able to play kind of a comfortable is a bad word on Survivor. Like, if you're comfortable, that's when you're in trouble. But I think that she's been able to play a little bit more relaxed than most of these people, where she hasn't really had to worry about the target on her back that much. And I think that's afforded her some flexibility. So I'm very excited and interested to see where she goes with this thing next. And I think it's cool that she's got the vote seal, and I can't wait to see how that plays out.
Is it possible, due to her close relationship with Zeke, that Zeke told her about the pendulum strategy invented by Will Wall in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, and that she's trying to execute said strategy?
Yeah, maybe instead of talking about Tony whispering in Sarah's ear, we want to talk about Will being the secret force behind Sarah's gameplay this season.
Yeah, she's like, hey, actually, that's not a bad idea, pendulum strategy.
Yeah, wow, this Will Wall, he's a true winner.
He's really on top of it.
He's an entrepreneur of Survivor strategy.
Yeah. Josh, before we move along with the Wiggle Room, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor. And Mother's Day is coming up. And of course, there's been so many great mothers in Survivor history, right?
Another ranking that we could do at some point in the future, although that seems touchy.
Yeah, I think it'd be some sliding scales and really would depend on criteria. But with Mother's Day around the corner. Let me mention canvaspeople.com. And what a great gift for Mother's Day to get a photo of you and your mom or your kids and send it to grandma. Yeah. Of Josh and Debbie, even. Send it over with canvaspeople.com because they have a very easy to use photo to canvas service that takes your favorite pictures and turns them into beautiful artwork for you to enjoy every day. Instead of snapping a photo and just uploading it to the internet, you can bring that photo to life, put it on the walls of your home, in your office, or give as a great gift. Go through that camera roll, find your favorite photo, put it on a beautiful gallery wrapped canvas and hang it on your wall. Whether that's a photo from a recent vacation, from your wedding, of your newborn, or your family, Sari could take the picture of her walking across the balance beam, Josh, and then hang it on her wall.
Wow. Or in the case of Boston Rob, hang it on his back.
Yes, yes. Amber could have sent Boston Rob a canvas photo to wear on his back so he could literally be having his family on his back. Nicole and I just did it. We really love our canvas photo that we got. And we've got a great offer. Normally, an 11 by 14 photo canvas is $69.99 plus shipping. But for our listeners, they will reduce that down to $0. You just pay the shipping. It's less than $20 total. They're so sure you'll love the gorgeous canvas, they're willing to give you the first one for free. So it's not too good to be true. You can buy with confidence. They've served over 1 million customers. So to get that special offer, go to canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, select 11 by 14, enter promo code RHAP in the promo code box, and get that special $0 pricing. That's at canvaspeople.com with the promo code RHAP.
Okay. Now, I can't be the only person who's been hearing these Canvas People ads all week and thinking Candace People.
Candace like People.
You're speaking to Candace's fans directly. This is specifically for them.
Yes. So
Canvas Woodcock Cody.
Yeah, what would you do at CandacePeople.com?
I don't know. It's just like a place to go where you can like deliver middle fingers to your enemies.
Yeah.
You can just like send them. It's like glitter bombing somebody, but it's just F-bombs that you're throwing.
Yeah.
Cross country.
Watch out, Brad Culpepper. Watch out, yeah. JT. Okay.
I like Candace People. I'm going to subscribe immediately.
All right. So, Josh, you want to talk about some advantages going on? You know, every week it seems like the Survivor fans are saying, like, boy, there's a lot of advantages going on. A lot of idols, a lot of twists.
Yeah. I mean, last week, Debbie plays her second vote. And now we have yet another advantage that comes into the game as soon as that is out. So it's status quo. It is what it was last week. I mean, it's a different thing that's in the game, but it operates under a similar function. Although I think that there's definitely different, you know, strategic uses for the two things. But we're still at that point where there's how many idols in the game right now? Three idols, four. Two with Ty, one with Troy Zan, one with Sierra if she makes to six, but whoever gets to six is going to have to deal with that thing. And now we also have this vote steal in the game. Is there anything else that's actively in the game right now? It's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot of advantages.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It's a lot for sure.
There is a lot of stuff going on, and who knows what else could come.
Yeah. So it's a bunch. This was a popular question that was floated our way on Twitter for this week. Johnny D. Silvera, shout out to him. How much of a cluster F of tribal could we be potentially headed into with Sierra's advantage, Ty's two idols, Troy Zan's idol, and Sarah's vote steal? How many blackboards, Rob, is Jeff Probst going to have to wheel out at the Survivor finale in a few weeks? When all of these things go off at the exact same time, how badly is this going to bury the complexity of that final six vote from Second Chance? Is this just going to be so super confusing when we get there?
Yeah, it really could be, because you could have this final six scenario where somebody has the legacy advantage. We have three idols in play. And also somebody's going to have individual immunity at that point. Is there any other way somebody else could be immune?
Oh my God. I don't know. Maybe there's another idol out there. Who knows? It really
is. Well, in that case, if there was five people with immunity, then whoever just doesn't have immunity is going to automatically go home.
Oh, that's going to be brutal. That's going to be brutal.
Like
who does that happen
to? It's like, okay, well, you know, I'm sorry, Aubrey, you don't have any idols or a legacy advantage or an immunity necklace, so you just go home. That's it.
Well, what if that's the reason for kind of a quieter Aubrey edit this season? Because isn't that usually what happens to, like, the person who is the unlucky recipient of some sort of you're rocked out or you're, like, super idled out or whatever of the season, that sometimes those people are a little bit quieter? Is this the fate we're looking at for Aubrey Bracco?
I mean, I just picked Aubrey out of the air. I don't know if it's going to necessarily be her. She doesn't have an idol right now.
Yeah.
But give her time.
I hope not.
Give her time, Josh.
That would be awful. But I mean, really, it would be such a horrible way to go for anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, but I don't know. Some of these things have to start going off soon, or they are all going to go off at the same time, or maybe some of them are going to go unplayed. Ty went with his idol unplayed, correct? Like, he never played that thing in Koh Rang.
Yeah, he was going to, and then we had the infamous Joe Del Campo incident.
Right. So, I don't know. What if Ty goes to final, like, gets through the final five and still has two idols in his pocket? That would be ridiculous.
Well, that would be pretty wacky if
that
he
would be wacky.
Yeah, but Josh, has it affected your viewing of the season? Because I have to say, it doesn't bother me that much. I know that people have talked about there's too many things, but I don't think we've had a situation yet where, and I had some issues with the combined tribal council, but I don't think we've had an issue yet where all of the advantages have created a situation where I feel like that we've gotten a bad product because of it.
So if all of these things go off at the same time, or if enough of them go off at the same time to create like an unbreakable situation that's like just like an impossible to figure out situation like the Kimmy Kappenberg thing, and then like Suri is the person who goes home because of it, I think people are going to be furious.
Right.
I think that, and like that would be something that sucks. Like if these can all come together in like a way that is so complicated and unforeseen that that as like a combined thing, they become a giant slayer. Like they take out somebody who's really positioned, even like a really exciting underdog story, if it cuts that out too. That would suck. That would really, really suck. But we just haven't gotten there yet. For me, they're not major considerations yet, just because like the possibilities that stem from them all are very unpredictable and also maybe just a little more complicated for my brain to process at this point. We'll get there when we get there. So I'm not really tracking them too much week to week. But as I've said in the past on one of these podcasts a few weeks ago, like I can see the day where these could all go off at the same time, where a couple of them could go off and it could be such a complicated situation that it's just going to be like really difficult to unpack and potentially also just like a bad result, like a result that you're not happy that this is the way that this thing went. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
We have to wait and see. And really, it's going to play out over the next 2.5 weeks. I guess it could play into the finale. I guess that first vote at the finale, I mean, that's where it all went off during Survivor Cambodia. So basically, in these next 4 or 5 tribal councils, that's where we're going to see it all. See if the magic happens.
Yeah. I mean, it could be awesome. Like some sort of, you know, crazy Survivor explosion could take place and it's just going to be amazing. But who knows? We have no idea what it looks like. I will be, you know, less anxious about it if one of Ty's idols gets played next week, or if, you know, a vote steal is used or whatever, or Troyzan misplays his idol or something like that. I don't know. We just have to kind of hold our breaths and wait. But this is, when you think about it, like it's something that like you can't prepare for it. You're just going to have to deal with it when it happens.
I mean, it's funny that everybody is so skittish about it, Josh. Can you think of the time that it was a bad moment where there were too many advantages or idols played at tribal council?
But I think at that same point, like there's never been a situation where there's been this much stuff in the game. This much stuff. So I think that this is kind of hashtag unprecedented in that way, where, you know, you do have so many different artifacts. You've got 5 different artifacts in the game right now. With how many people left? 11? It's a lot.
It is a lot. So we'll see. But even like Parity playing 2 idols, or Jeremy and Kelly both playing their idols and getting 0 votes, or the super idol, in play but not being used, Steven playing his advantage. Like, I think all of those things are remembered fondly.
It's Survivor, so I'm inclined to think that it's going to be awesome until proven otherwise. That's just kind of my philosophy with the show to begin with. But I think that the threat of it just being so much is absolutely looming. But you raise a great point as well. The Parvati moment is incredible. That final 6 at Second Chance, I think it's divisive for some people, but was certainly, you and I can remember, that was really riveting in the room. It was fun. So yeah, it could break both ways. But I do think that there is a threat level here of like, I think that we're testing the threshold of, is there such a thing as too much stuff on Survivor?
Okay, Josh, speaking of too much stuff, something that has been circulating this weekend. Have you taken a look at the BuzzFeed quiz? Which Survivor Season 34 contestant are you?
Yeah, you know, I have seen this. I have not taken this quiz, but I know that it is out there. So it's what? It's just a classic BuzzFeed quiz. where you answer some questions and you get assigned somebody from Survivor. That's just how it works. Pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. I have not taken it either, Josh.
Oh, my. Well, I smell an opportunity.
Okay, we're going to do this.
I think we're going to do this, right? We have to, right?
All right, right now, right? We're not going to stop down. We're going to go through it.
Yeah. All right, let's just do it. Yeah, let's take the BuzzFeed quiz. Let's take this on the air. Let's take this on the podcast.
We'll post a link in the show notes if you want to pause this and take it along with Josh and I. Do you need a second to get it open?
No, I have it open now. I just pulled it up.
The BuzzFeed quiz.
I saw that Malcolm was very frustrated with it.
He was frustrated with it. What did Malcolm say?
I think Malcolm was on a bit of a tweet storm today on Sunday.
Oh, boy.
Going through the quiz over and over again and trying to get himself and being unsuccessful in that attempt after, I think, like 8 different iterations of doing this quiz.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
He wonders if Malcolm is even an option. So I guess maybe we're about to find out. Maybe one of us, maybe you or I are Malcolm.
Yes. Okay. Do you have a prediction as to which Survivor you are?
Of the people that, I mean, Couch Potato, Suri Fields, maybe.
Okay. You're Suri.
I would certainly empathize with that.
You're Suri. Who am I?
Who are you? You're an authority figure. You're like a classic Sheriff Don Thomas, right?
Sheriff Don Thomas. Okay.
Yeah, you're the sheriff in town.
A credit to Thayer Murphy, the author and community contributor who put this together.
So the author of his own BuzzFeed quiz?
Yes, yes. So the quiz starts off with, which animal are you? Dolphin, panda, cat, or chicken?
Damn. Well, as much as I want to select Chicken Dam, I think I got to be a cat because I have 2 cats mm-hmm. and they're pretty lazy and they kind of speak my language. So I'm going to go with the cat.
I mean, which animal am I?
Well, dolphins, despite appearances, are like the smartest people in the room. That kind of sounds like you, Rob.
Mm-hmm. But I do feel like
you don't project smartest person in the room necessarily, but you are. That's secretly who you are.
Because I'm in this room by myself. I think that's why. but in terms of a panda, I feel like they sit around and sort of just graze throughout the day.
Yeah. I could see you as a panda.
Okay.
Kung Fu Panda?
Yeah, I do not care for the Miami Dolphins, so I will say I'll be a panda.
All right, let's make you a panda. I'm happy with this choice. All right.
Would you eat a baby goat is question number 2, Josh.
Oh, my God. And the options are, hell yeah, I'm hungry, with a picture of JT who looks like he's hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hungry, but I can't do that. I'll just win food at the challenge. Or, hell no, I would never do that. Those are your options. I assume, would you eat a baby goat in the circumstances that were featured on Survivor this season, and rather than just, would you eat a baby goat, period?
In general. Yeah.
Right.
I think I would be solidly, I'm hungry, but I can't do that, as opposed to, I would never do that under any circumstances.
We are aligned on this issue.
Okay. Which job would you like the most? Doctor, athlete, police officer, or teacher?
I don't even like any of these job possibilities. No, I'm certainly not an athlete. I don't think I've got the brain for being a doctor, although I have been called Dr. Wiggles in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps that will be my name in this horror movie that I'm shooting later today. I'm certainly way too craven to be a police officer. I think I got to go with teacher. That was almost my plan coming out of college, was I was going to be an English teacher. So let's go with teacher.
Okay, what about me? Doctor, athlete, police officer, or teacher?
Well, I think, you know, if you're reading the question, which job would you like the most?
Mm-hmm.
I think that you would like to be an athlete. That would be fun if you were like an NFL player, right?
Boy, I guess I would like it the most, but I wouldn't be good at it. Okay,
you
fine.
You could be a doctor of survivology.
Yes. Okay. Would I like the most? Sure. I guess I would like being an athlete, but it would not actually be what I would do. Okay.
You got histories of police officers in the family. Would you be a cop? Was that ever a thing?
No, I never thought about being a police officer. I do think that there's probably parts of the job that would appeal to me, that my dad always enjoyed being a cop. There's like a camaraderie that I feel like that you have between you and your coworkers as a police officer. I mean, teacher is fun. You have a summer off, but... we'll just stick with athlete because people are probably, I'm overestimating how much people care about the results of this.
Okay. Right, fair enough.
How many times would you play Survivor? I'd try it once with a picture of Lisa Welchel. I'd play again if I lost with a picture of Shireen. Again and again until I won with a picture of Russell, or again and again until I lost with a picture of Sandra. Now, what is the difference between Russell and Sandra?
Well, I think again and again until I won is you're going to keep playing until you win. And for Sandra, it's you've already won twice and you'll just keep going until you lose.
Okay. All right. So, Josh, what are you going to pick?
Well, I think I'd certainly try it once. Mm-hmm. But I think if I did well or if I really liked the experience, I'd play it again. But I think I'd probably cap it at two. So I'm going to say I'd play again if I lost.
Yeah, I think I'm sort of really forced into this one. I picked the I'd play again if I lost.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's kind of how it went.
All right. What would be your role at the camp? We have fishing, we have cooking, we have gathering, and we have leading.
Oh, my God. I don't know. I don't want to cook because I'm going to ruin everything. I certainly shouldn't be fishing because I'm not going to catch anything.
Yeah.
And I don't want to lead because I don't want to be looked that way, right? Like, and I also think I'd be a terrible choice to be the leader of any kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'll gather some stuff. Why not? Okay. Like, that just seems useful. Like, I'll just go off. I'll collect some stuff. I'll talk to people. I'll go looking for idols. I'm going to be a gatherer.
I used to cook, so I'll go with cooking.
You're the cooker.
Okay.
All right.
Who would you vote out first? The physical threat, the annoying one, the social threat, or the weakest link?
I think you got to go weakest link. Goodbye. I feel like that's the answer. It's broad. It potentially encompasses all of these things. Like, if you're weakest link, like, that can be open to interpretation. Like, maybe like the physically strongest person is also an irritant around camp, and it would be better to just get rid of them now than to wait. So I'm going to go with the weakest link. I think that encompasses everything.
I feel like I would say the annoying one you know, sometimes when you look back to the Tambaki tribe, this is really checks off a lot of boxes. But I think that just in general, the annoying one is probably the best answer here. And then would you play like a hero or a villain? I'm too nice to be a villain. I'm the villain you think is your friend. I'll lie and cheat and steal to win. Or I'll try to be hero, but villains usually get further.
This is tough. I don't know if I'm too nice to be a villain. I think that I could play Survivor with a little bit of that streak. Well, the picture that is associated with I'm the villain you think is your friend is Don and Brenda. So that's a really negative connotation. You don't want to be that type of villain who then goes to the end and gets shut out.
Yeah.
I'll be Tony. I'll lie, cheat, and steal to win. How about that?
Okay.
How about that?
I don't know if I'm so much of somebody who's a stealer.
What if you have the vote steal? You might need to steal to win.
I guess so. I'm the villain you think is your friend, or I'll lie, cheat, and steal to win?
I think you're with me. I think you're on the Tony side.
Okay, on the Tony side. Good.
I think you'll lie, cheat, and steal to win.
And then finally, which challenge would you win? The puzzle, the foot race, the obstacle course, or endurance?
Just from the challenges I've been lucky enough to test out, I got to go with the puzzle.
Okay. All right. I'm going to wait to hit click on this. Josh, okay, you go first. Okay.
Okay,
so
here we go.
You have hits.
Are you picking puzzle as well?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to hit puzzle and we're going to see who I am. I'm Zeke.
Zeke. Okay.
I'm Zeke. I'm cool. I'm calm. I'm collected. I make the most of what's thrown at me, which is perfect because you're here to make a name for yourself. You pay your respects to yesterday's legends because you plan to be a legend of tomorrow. Like that show on the CW?
Yeah.
Wow.
A legend of tomorrow. That's Zeke.
A legend of tomorrow. Yeah, I'm going to be Captain Cold. It's going to be awesome.
So the bad news for Zeke, not a legend of today, but the good news is a legend of tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Okay. Brighter days ahead.
All right, I'm going to click on the puzzle, and I got Brad Culpepper. Yes.
It was the athlete that triggered it.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Who doesn't love a redemption story? You're a natural leader and would do anything for your family. So, yeah. So I am just like Brad Culpepper.
That sounds right. I mean, that actually does sound like a good description of you, Rob.
Yep. That, you know, maybe people might not agree, but that's the fact. I am the new Brad Culpepper.
And I am the new Zeke. And a missed opportunity on both of our parts when we were clicking for our results that we did not use the official click anthem.
Oh, yes. That's very silly. And we'll retroactively
click, 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 click.
Which is really BuzzFeed's motto, right?
Yeah. Listen, as somebody in that industry, it's really all of our motto.
All right, Josh. Great stuff. And let's see what happens. Do you have a prediction as to which side is going to prevail this week?
Wouldn't it be great if it just, you know, if the Cerise side and all those people, they could just stick it together and they could keep going and it could be a frog march to the end. But I highly doubt that that's going to be the situation. I think it's pretty volatile right now. And certainly the preview suggests that Zeke and Andrea are not holding. That was a one-time deal. deal.
Yeah. Okay. You think that the Empire Strikes Back this week?
Yeah, I think it. I think it'll be another kind of reconfiguration. I think that there's enough. You know, I think that there's enough room on both sides of the aisle for people to play with people from the other group. Like this may have shaken things up by destabilizing the six and turning them into a five. So I would not rule out that they could pull something together. Certainly, there are enough people this season in Zeke, in Sarah. You know, get Saree on the right day. I think that there are people who would be willing to just like go where it looks like it's going and let's just make a move in that direction. So I don't imagine it's just going to be a straight and narrow vote this week.
Yeah, it looks like a really exciting showdown here at the final 10. So very exciting Wednesday night should be in store for all of us. All right, Josh. And as I said at the top of the show, very much looking forward to digging into the latest Leftovers recap that you and Antonio have gotten together on over on Post Show Recaps.
I am also excited. All Scott Glenn all the time. How can that be bad? You can't.
All right. So looking forward to that. Check that out. And Josh, anything else you're working on for THR?
I'm covering this new show, American Gods, that is already premiered by the time that you are listening to this. It's a new show on Starz, not for the faint of heart.
What is it? First episode, I never even heard of it, American Gods.
It's based on a novel by a great fantasy author and comic book author named Neil Gaiman. If you know what Sandman is, not the Spider-Man villain, that is Neil Gaiman's. And it is based on a book of his from 2001 that takes place in America. And it's about a man who is caught in the middle of a war between old gods and new gods, like new gods of technology and media versus old gods of myth, like Odin and other types of people and other types of gods. It's compelling. It's cool. It's very visually interesting. It is from Brian Fuller, who's the guy who brought you such shows and delights as Hannibal and Pushing Daisies. So it's got a really good pedigree. I've seen a little bit of it, and I've really enjoyed what I've seen. So I'm covering that for THR right now.
All right. So be on the lookout for that at Round Howard on Twitter. I'm going to be back with the next show. So talking to David Bloomberg about why Debbie lost, I'm sure that we will find some interesting nuggets there. And then also be on the lookout for continuing Big Brother Canada 5 coverage coming up on the Rehap Ups. And also, I know we got the Ours podcast up late. That's in the feed, the Bryce feedback show as well. All right, Josh. So a lot of fun stuff coming up this week. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes for that. Looking forward to reading your comments on robhasawebsite.com. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.